Hi, thanks for listening to the It's Not Just One Thing podcast series from Physio My Dog. I'm Harriet Kitkat and I'm from Physio My Dog. I'm a vet physiotherapist specialising in dogs, but I'm also a dog owner myself, and I'm also incredibly nosy and interested in knowing more and more about what we can do as dog owners, but also as therapists as to what we can do to help dogs. So I hope you find this series useful. So, welcome everyone to another edition of this podcast series. I say it every time, but I've just really, really, really enjoyed doing all of these because I feel like I learn so much each time, and I'm hoping that everyone that's listening has been learning different things each time as well. Because let's face it, there's so much to learn, isn't there, with regards to dogs. So, another favourite topic of mine is puppies, and so who can be bored of talking about puppies? And I've got the lovely Karis on the line, who I'll ask to introduce her in a second. I've known Karis for 2 or 3 years now through some of the work that I've been doing with her with my own dog, Baxter. Karis and her team are fantastic. So, Karis, do you want to just briefly introduce yourself, where you're based, what kind of work you do, that type of thing?
Yeah, no, thank you. So, I run a training and behaviour centre in Warminster in Wiltshire, which is near the cities of Bath and Salisbury. And basically, I studied behaviour way, way, way back when because my first dog was a bit of a crazy one, and I decided I wanted to learn everything I could really to help her, and everything grew from there. And she's currently 14, as Harriet knows, because she's helped treat her. And still actually going really well. But what I've learned over the years from working with dogs has only really grown my passion. So I studied a postgrad in animal behaviour counselling, and from there I've kind of just worked with dogs every single day. So at our centre in Warminster, we run between 15 and 20 training classes a week. I've got a trainer that works for me who's absolutely fantastic and has trained up with me using all of the scientific and positive reinforcement based techniques that our ethos endorses. And we've also got a pet shop that's stocked with training and behaviour items that are kind of essentials for everybody from puppies through to reactive rescues. And we just kind of support our clients in every way, shape and form we possibly can, to be honest. So if you've got a dog and you end up being one of our customers, we'll kind of do as much as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can back that up because I bought so many lovely things from your shop there. And as I say, just kind of like reendorsing the fact that, you know, what you guys do is fantastic and how supportive you all are. And, you know, what we were just talking a minute ago, just about the different types of training that we all need as owners or to help our dogs. And, you know, Karis has been doing some online courses recently as well, you know, with lockdown, what have you.
Yeah. And I think after everything that lockdown has put and, you know, the coronavirus outbreak has put all of us through, you know, throughout the world, one good thing that we can say we took out of it is the fact that all of us behaviourists and trainers have learnt how to be dog trainers online. And it's really shown us the value of it, because actually for our puppy owners, being able to do a training course where they're at home in the comfort of their own home, where they've got, you know, their puppy's own bed right next to them if puppy gets overtired, and their favourite toy over there in the cupboard if they need to be distracted, and they're not feeling pressured by other puppy owners that might be perfect over in the corner and they're worried about how their puppy's performing. Online classes have been an absolute godsend. And as we were just saying, with a dog that might not be well suited to a group training class, because it's really not for everybody, being able to go through all of the techniques and the rehearsals of all the different behaviours that we want to teach our dogs in a group setting, with that supportiveness of, you know, five other owners in that Zoom room with you all practicing the same thing at the same time, is really nice, because we don't have to worry if our dogs are a bit barky.
Exactly.
Or they get a bit nervous or anything like that, which is
yeah
great.
No, it is. So puppies, so that leads us nicely to our we can talk about so many different things, Caris, but I know that when we were trying to decide what to talk about, we thought actually puppy socialization sounds like kind of a good place to start, certainly at the moment, because obviously, you know, we're referring to lockdown, what have you, and there just seems to, I mean, I know that I think the last data available of how many puppies there or how many dogs there are in the UK, when I was looking at this a couple of days ago, it was around, I think the last lot of data is like 2018 or something, and they reckon it's about 9 million dogs in the UK. And I'm thinking with COVID the last year, it just feels like there's just been this massive kind of like influx of so many different people for various reasons. They, you know, the time has then come for them to get a puppy. So starting from the very beginning then, a very broad question, I should say, but what is the best way of owners socializing puppies? From, you know, from the moment they get them home, where do they start? Like what is the best first step for them to start that journey, as it were?
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest question that we always get asked, and it's probably one of the hardest to answer, only because it's got to be puppy specific. So if you've got a puppy that is more nervous in temperament, the way that we want to socialise that puppy is very different to if we've got a puppy that's very confident in temperament. And then we also have to take into account the breeding environment that the puppy has come from and what exposure to various stimuli they may or may have not had at the breeders as well. So it's a really difficult question to answer accurately for every single puppy owner out there, is kind of what I'm saying, because it's really easy to get wrong. And I think that's the most important thing to remember. And obviously we've got masses and masses of media attention, both on social media and in sort of mainstream media, about the importance of puppy socialization and how they must meet lots of dogs and lots of humans, et cetera, which isn't incorrect. But sometimes I think it puts the wrong mentality in new owners' heads as such as to how they should be socialising their puppy, because what puppy socialisation really means is teaching our pups how to cope with day-to-day human life and the world, and additionally 21st century life, and also life in your home. So it's what you want to be able to do with your dog when it's a 10-year-old dog or a 5-year-old dog. As well as, you know, what our neighbours might want to do with theirs, because that might be two completely different things. So I think for our puppy owners out there, what they need to sit down and just think about is what social skills do they need their puppy to have? So if they don't do cafe visits or pub visits, and they're not intending to take their puppy when it's an adult to those places, then that's not something that's majorly important. But if it is something that they want to be able to do, then it's essential that the puppy experiences something along those lines as early as possible, really. So it's got to be quite bespoke, I think, is the main thing that I'm getting at. I had a little bit of a discussion the other day with another animal professional who isn't a trainer or a behaviourist, who said, well, you know, the literature says you must meet 100 dogs and 100 humans every week for the first 16 weeks of puppy life, and that's not incorrect, and for lots of puppies out there that's a perfect way to socialize them. But I can think of a massive amount of puppies that I've met in the last year who that would be so inappropriate for, because it would be so overwhelming and overstimulating that actually we're going to end up with an adolescent dog that's really fearful of dogs and humans if we do that. So we've got to be really mindful of what speed we go at with socialization for that specific individual.
Yeah, no, it makes complete sense. And I'm just, as you're talking as well, I'm thinking it's obviously it's about thinking about what is, you know, that whole process, like you say, for the dog, because they are all individual. Like, and I say that in my, and I'm sure lots of dog professionals say that in whatever it is that they're doing, every dog is different. How they respond to some things are different. You know, they're individuals like we are. They all have their different personality. They might be the same breed, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be acting in the same way as, you know, golden retrievers, you know, I love golden retrievers. We've had two, and they're complete in their personalities. They were completely different. And I think what is also quite interesting as well is through this whole process is really kind of, and I guess it's probably where you probably have lots of different discussions, is the types of owners, because there's so many different types of owners, isn't there? So you've got yeah. owners that have maybe, especially in the last year or so, that they've never had a dog before, but for whatever reasons they've now chosen, you know, the time is obviously right for them to get a puppy now. So you've got brand new owners that have never had a dog before, or you may have owners that have had dogs, but you know, maybe they grew up with them, but they haven't actually had them in as an adult. And then I guess you've got other owners that have maybe already got dogs within the home. So as you said, you've got like an older dog. So I would imagine there's probably people that are thinking, oh yeah, you know, I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to have my current dog for, so I'm going to get a puppy. And then you might already have a dog that's maybe only 1 or 2 or 3 years old. So there's going to be, I think it's a really interesting point for people, isn't it? Is that, as you said, thinking about the environment that the puppies come from, but also the environment they're actually going into and the people around them.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think it's really important to try to get that level of exposure that we put our puppies under as accurate as possible to their needs, so that it really meets them. I mean, what puppy socialization is about is teaching them that the world isn't scary as far as is possible, and teaching them how to read humans and how to read all manners of ages and breeds of dogs and sizes of dogs and coats of dogs, but also that motorbikes aren't scary and air brakes on buses aren't scary and tractors are okay and horses are okay and we don't chase the sheep, and sort of every aspect of life that they've experienced it and rehearsed an appropriate reaction to it whilst they're in their sensitive period, which I mean, the research studies that come out, it can vary dependent on the individual and the breed of dog, but we know that our sensitive period in our puppies is around 16 weeks long, so when they hit 16 weeks it's kind of over. So during that time, we want to be exposing them to lots of different environments, scents, smells, as sights, sounds, and showing them that it's not scary. But also, I think the aspect that sometimes gets a bit missed is that it's not too exciting either. Because if we just let our puppies meet and play with lots and lots and lots and lots of dogs, actually, that creates more frustration and overexcitement in our teenagers, so our adolescent dogs, and sometimes our adults as well. And then we can get frustration, reactivity, not because our dog's not friendly, but because it just wants to play with everybody, which, of course, when they're 16 weeks old is okay. But when they're 8 months old, sometimes it's not.
So yeah.
We've got to teach them the appropriate responses in all of these situations whilst we're socialising them. And we have certainly over the last couple of years seen more issues that have come out of over socialization, where dogs are just so besides themselves to see humans and dogs. And we've seen more problems down to that than I would say fearful.
Yeah. Dogs. Yeah. And I think probably that's maybe where Baxter kind of comes in as well. I think, maybe, I mean, I say we don't know too much about where he came from, but what you've just described is very much how he is. It's like he just gets so excited. He just wants to get, you know. Yeah. But anyway, I won't talk on too much about Baxter.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
but say someone's listening to this and they're thinking, right, we're just about to get a puppy, or I'm thinking about getting a puppy. What would your advice be for, because I know what it's like, you know, you maybe get your puppy and then maybe the breeder gives you some information, or you've bought a book, or, you know, you've read something online. Like where should an owner start? Like what would your advice be to, okay, if you only do one thing, like maybe seek this resource? Would it be to find a trainer? Would that be your advice? But what would be your first bit of advice for an owner that, as I say, is considering a puppy or just about to pick one up, for instance?
And I really would recommend finding a trainer that has got the ability to support you as an owner, as a new puppy owner, in every which way that's appropriate for you, which might be, you know, a 30-minute phone conversation Or it might be a one-to-one session, or it might be a full puppy course. But finding a well-qualified and well-educated trainer who can give you, you know, backed information about how is best to work with your specific puppy would be the best advice, only because there's only so far generic advice can go, as we've just said, because it's got to be bespoke to the individual situation and the individual dog. And the best resource for that, in my opinion, is the APDT's website, which is the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, because the membership program with the APDT means that you have to have a certain level of education and knowledge in order to be able to even be considered for membership. And then you have to pass a full-blown practical and oral assessment in order to get membership. So this isn't something that we just get, say, we can be a dog trainer and we do an online course and buy into a membership online. This is, you know, a very well-vetted membership association where people can't be an APDT dog trainer unless they've got enough experience and knowledge. And that way you can be wholeheartedly reassured that any information or advice that you receive about what's best for you and your puppy is going to be correct. Because I certainly see, sadly, quite a lot of that where people have just been slightly misinformed, not through any malice, just through sometimes a bit of lack of knowledge or a bit of misunderstanding. And, you know, when we're at 5 months in puppy age, sometimes that can be quite a lot to undo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the earlier you do that, really, the better. And I think that's the best way to make sure that the information you're basing your work with your puppy on is going to be applicable to you and yours.
Really. Yeah. And so, and again, you know, so we're now recording this in March. And so certainly in our part of the UK that, you know, restrictions from a COVID perspective are starting to be lifted now. And, you know, over the next few months, things are going to be hopefully in some way back to some kind of normality. So I'm thinking there's going to be lots of people that would have got puppies during various parts of this lockdown process. So have you got any kind of like, again, not, I appreciate you can't be too specific sometimes because it can be very specific to the dog, but are there certain things that you would be advising people to start thinking about now that maybe have got, you know, a fairly young dog to help them start to prepare for, you know, for when life is maybe out of lockdown?
Yeah, hopefully a return to normality.
Not homeschooling and all the rest of it.
Yeah, no, that's right. And actually being able to vaguely see some people. Really, so sort of, young puppies who are in their sensitive period, what we should be aiming to do is at least one new experience every day. And it is important that they experience lots of different people and lots of different dogs. But that doesn't necessarily mean meeting up or you know, seeing somebody up the field, letting the puppy off and letting them play full blown. It just means experiencing them. So it means seeing them, smelling them, hearing them, and learning that it's not that exciting and it's not scary either. So our new puppy owners should be aiming to make sure that they're racking up lots of new experiences, but ensuring that our puppies are staying calm and relaxed whilst they're doing so. And that's going to really help take them into the next stage of their puppy's development.
Mm.
And with all of our dogs, whether they're 5 months, we seem to have a massive influx of 5-month-old puppies right now, all requesting training. And I think they've all been victims of this lockdown a little bit and their circumstances. But whether they're a 5-month-old puppy or a 4-month-old puppy or a 10-month-old puppy, what we should be doing with them is training at least once a day, even if that's just 5 minutes of leave its or sits whilst they're on their lead. But engaging them in a really structured, reinforcement-based activity, both inside and outside the house. Because one of the biggest problems we find with puppy training is they're so overstimulated when they're out on a walk that it can be very difficult for us to get their attention and get them to respond to what we ask of them. So we've got to set the precedent for that by going to the field and just practicing sits when there's no one around, or going to the field and playing some hunting games in the grass with some food. Or so we're really engaging with them, both inside and outside the house, and they're learning that actually training with their owners is fun. Mm. And that's really going to help them as our life gradually, hopefully, gets back to normal over the rest of this year. It's going to help them already have a knowledge base within their pup that they can draw on when they're in new situations. And also that nice structured bond with the puppy as well, so that when we're experiencing new stuff like a busy town centre, or you know, at the beach even, oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it? You know, so that they've actually got that experience of training with their owner already in calm environments, so that we can gradually build it into hopefully a slightly busier way of life as things gradually go back to normal.
And what about kind of like within the home? Because the first thing I'm thinking of is, you know, people obviously working from home, or say kids being homeschooled and what have you. And then, you know, gradually as say kids are going back, and then potentially people are going to be going back into the office and that type of thing. So, you know, you don't, I guess we want to avoid the situation where the dogs or the puppies used to having everyone around all the time, and then all of a sudden everyone's just gone the next day. So what kind of like, what sort of advice would you give to people that are potentially, as I say, in 2 weeks' time or 3 weeks' time, going to be soon going back to the office? What kind of things should they be doing to help sort of future-proof that dog as much as they possibly could?
Yeah, and it's been really hard for all of us, I think, as dog owners or as new dog owners as well, because we've been so restricted in where we can go and what we can do. But the biggest life skill that we can teach any of our dogs is how to relax on their own. So if it's not something that, as a puppy owner, we've looked at as yet, it is something that we should start today. And that could be a case of you sitting one side of a dog gate and the puppy sitting the other side of the dog gate, and just being apart via a gate to begin with, and then building gradually on from there, or the dog in the puppy crate and us just outside of the puppy crate, so that they get used to spending time on their own. And I think because from a functional perspective, our dogs enrich our lives so much with all of the stress of the lockdowns that we've had over the last year. Of course, we turn to our dogs for comfort a lot. So naturally, I think a lot of those life skills of them being okay on their own have gone, partly because of our needs. Because we, you know, if you're feeling a bit low, that's what most of us turn to. I think I'm not alone in that, is spending a bit more time with the dog. So it's just really important that we stay mindful of ensuring that we're practicing that every day, whether it's, like I say, just either side of a gate or door, or whether it's the fact that you make sure the dog stays in a different room whilst you go for a bath or a shower, or, you know, whether you can go and do a bit of gardening if the weather allows it and the dog stays inside for 5 minutes. But it's just making sure that we're practicing it. And if the dog's struggling at all, seeking professional help earlier rather than later.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, actually, is at what point do you think, what sort of signs should owners be looking out? You know, because some owners might be thinking, well, yeah, it's kind of going okay, you know, type thing. What are the classic signs that you would expect to see, or owners to see, that where actually maybe a little bit of help is needed now?
It depends again on the situation and the individuals, but a sort of early door sign is that the dog follows you around all of the time. So whenever you get up, the dog wakes up if it's resting and wants to follow you. And of course, to a certain extent, sometimes that's normal. But if it's consistent and you literally can't go into another room without the dog wanting to come, if you can't go to the toilet without the dog wanting to come, then it's suggesting that there might be a bit of an over-attachment issue there. And of course, the main telltale sign is vocalisation, and not a puppy whinging, please come back, I'd love you to come back, but you know, I'm panicking, where have you gone, I need you back, type vocalisation is of immediate concern.
Mm.
And some dogs can do it better than others. You know, naturally they come with a better skill set for it, and others don't experience it enough. so that when it does happen, it can be a major panic button that gets hit. So it's looking for that constant need for the dog to always be at your feet. You know, if you can't cook without them sitting on your feet, or if you can't move from one chair to the other without them readjusting their position so that they're right next to you, then it's suggesting there might be a bit of a problem there.
And what about if there's already a dog within the home? How much do you feel that, again, again, this is probably a very broad question, but I'll ask it anyway, because all dogs are individuals, like we mentioned earlier on, but how easy or easier is it to socialise? So say you've already got a dog within the home, so maybe, I don't know, say it's under 5 years old, roughly, and then you bring a new puppy in. How different is that process for that young puppy being socialised versus if it was the only puppy in the, or the only dog in the home?
I mean, as far as what we should be doing with the puppy, it's not really, because it's about the novelty factor when we're talking socialisation. So it's novel dogs, it's novel humans, it's novel environments that we should be teaching them aren't scary and aren't too exciting. So we still need to teach a puppy that if it's living with an older dog.
Mm.
However, you've got the extra dynamic. So you've got to consider if your older dog's got bad habits. So, you know, if your older dog's reactive or if your older dog is overly sociable and a bit excitable, then we don't want those bad habits to rub off on the puppy. Mm. But also you've got a bit of a helping hand, because if you've got a bit of a nervous puppy, then having the older dog there in new experiences can give them a really big comfort base.
Yeah.
Which is really good for them and can help bring them out of their shell and find their feet. But, and that's quite a big but, you've also got to make sure that the puppy learns to do it without the older dog.
Mm.
We've always got to consider that they're both not going to be around forever, potentially. So at one point, you would normally expect the younger dog to be able to do this stuff without the older one. But additionally, you want to be able to make sure that you can go out with your puppy without your older dog and then to still be okay with lots of new experiences. So to cope with novelty when the older dog isn't present. And that's something I see quite a lot of, is the puppy's fine when we take our older dog out, but if we take the puppy out on their own, they're very, very scared.
Yeah. And it can, and I think, and also like with some of the work that I do, so for instance, you know, I know a family set up where, you know, one of the dogs has had to have surgery, and there's another dog within the home. And so because the dog that's had surgery is getting, you know, physio, hydrotherapy, is getting a lot of attention within the home. This other dog then is, and they're fairly young, these dogs, you know, he's now kind of feeling the brunt of that, because it's like, well, hang on a minute, we used to do all this stuff together and now, you know, the other one's getting all this attention and what about me? So the owners are noticing that his behavior is now really changing. And that's, again, it's not necessarily puppy specific, but it's just the fact that how these things can actually then start to manifest where, you know, completely situations are out of our control. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I guess it's just trying to future proof, isn't it? That situations are going to come up that we can't necessarily control, but we're equipping our dogs, I guess, the best we possibly can.
Yeah, and with any multi-dog household, it's your structure and routine becomes important tenfold in comparison to if you've only got a single dog, so that there's predictability to resources around the house, which avoid, you know, too much attention seeking or any guarding or any discontent with what one or other or however many dogs you might have is getting within the house. So your structure and routine is really important for that. So when you're bringing a puppy into the house, you want to consider that from day dot, so that everybody kind of knows what's theirs, what isn't theirs, when it's their time, when it's not their time, just to make sure that as long as the predictability is there, then our dogs remain relaxed because we're giving them that structure.
Yeah.
Whereas if we don't, that's when problems can start to arise. And of course, if you're bringing a puppy into the home, you've got to consider how your older dog might feel about sharing attention, sharing resting spaces. You know, even if we're not talking full-blown growling over toys or anything, just the fact that suddenly what was completely theirs isn't anymore, can change behaviour massively. And of course, with something like one having an op and being poorly and naturally getting more attention, that can change the dynamic as well.
So to summarise then, which might be quite tricky, but so what would be your kind of like, so if people listening, as I say, kind of like the key, the do's and the don'ts really. So what are the things that owners should be doing, and then what are the things that maybe they should be avoiding?
So as a puppy owner, I think what you've just got to remember is that you've got your sensitive period to socialise your puppy with as much of the human world as you possibly can. But all of that socialisation should be set to a pace that's dictated by your puppy. So every day you're seeking your new experiences and new exposures to various stimuli, but we don't want to overstimulate. So if, you know, walking through the mall in town, even though it's quite quiet at the moment, if that sends our puppies crazy with excitement or shaky with concern, we should strip it back. And so we'll still expose them to the mall, but we'll stand right on the right back from the entrance and just watch people going in. So it's just, it's setting your socialization rate to be at your puppy's pace. And I think that's the most important take home, in my opinion, for all puppy owners to be considering.
Okay. And then the don'ts, what should they not be doing, do you think?
Oh, that's a really tricky question.
Sorry to put you on the spot there, Chris.
No, not at all.
I guess not overdoing really, it. I guess it's kind of not doing what they should be doing, if you like, if you know what I mean.
It's not overdoing it, and it's not underdoing it. So, you know, if you feel as though puppy's terrified of cars, but you don't, so therefore you don't see a car for 16 weeks, that's not okay either.
Yeah.
So you've got to not overdo it. So no, if we're a bit worried about cars, let's not go and stand on the main road, you know, with them after vaccinations on the floor, because that would be too much. You don't overdo it. But also, don't just avoid cars, because you're going to end up with an adult dog that's still scared of cars. So you've then got to find the right level of exposure. So, you know, avoidance isn't okay either. It's just setting it right to the pup.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose making sure that we're getting the right help. So like you were saying earlier on, you know, looking for those signs, isn't it? Like looking out for those signs that maybe some extra help is needed. And, you know, like you say, there are resources out there. So there are, you know, an association, and I'll put the link. I'll put a link obviously to your website and any other links that you think are useful for people to be able to look up, because I think it's, you know, as dog owners, we want to do the right thing, don't we? We want to make sure that our dogs are as youngsters setting themselves up to be great adults. And but sometimes, as I say, you know, you could think you're doing all the right things, but actually maybe things just need to be tweaked a little bit. So, but there is help there. And I think that's the important thing for people to remember, is that, you know, you just need to seek it. And I think it's not just training the dog, is it? I mean, it's, you know, whether they're puppies or adults. And I speak as a dog owner when I say this, you know, it's teaching the owners, not just the dog, you know, because the dogs pick it up pretty quick.
Yeah.
But the owners don't. Not always.
Yeah, and it really is. And even more specifically than just being about either or both training the owner and the dog, it's helping the relationship. Because sometimes how one owner should behave around their dog is different to a different owner and a different dog. So it's making sure the relationship status between dog and owner is absolutely as it should be, which is really, really vital, which is why when you're looking for help, you want to find somebody who's going to match that really well for you. You know, because you've got to hit the nail on the head with it. And then the world's your oyster. Like some stuff that I did, because we got a puppy at Christmas, as you know, Harriet, and it's stuff that some of the things that I did with her, were like really specific because I see so many behaviour problems, because obviously that's what I do as a job. And you know, a big one that I see is just fear of traffic. And I'm not talking full blown panic, runaway stuff, but you know, the fact that they don't really like road noise, for example, can create redirection problems where the dog bites your feet or lunges at your hand. It can create lead pulling problems because they want to pull really hard to get past the road. It can create reactivity problems because they're so sensitized by the road. They just bark at everything they see whilst they're near one. You know, it can create so many different issues. So like the first week of puppy coming to live with us, over at the end of December, we walked up and down our relatively quiet road that we live on. But there's, you know, there's always traffic moving around it. And we were carrying her because she wasn't vaccinated. Every time a car went past, I gave her a treat. I found some really palatable treats that were puppy friendly. And she was quite shaky at first, which we expect puppies to be when we're carrying them on their first few walks. But by the time we got to the point she was vaccinated and we'd go out walking, when she sees a car, she looks at me.
Aww.
And I created that just by doing, you know, classical conditioning with cars equal food, and she knows the food is delivered by me. And it's, you know, just that first week of saying, right, well, one thing I don't want my pup to be is scared of traffic. My eldest girl, my 14-year-old, she was quite nervous of traffic, which is one of the big problems we had to fix. So I wanted to make sure that wasn't going to be the case with her. And naturally now we've already got this relationship where when there's something that initially she was a bit spooked about, she just looked straight at me. And it's that type of relationship that we really want to be helping our owners to establish with both puppies and their older dogs, you know. So they look to us for that guidance and reassurance, I guess.
I love the fact as well that, I meant to say it to you a bit earlier on, I love the fact that you've got into it as well because of, you know, what you do now was driven by your own dog. And I think that's what's so fascinating when I've been talking to all these different people on these podcasts is...
It really is.
And, you know, everyone, I mean, there's so much to learn, isn't there? There's so much to learn. And I think it's... when you have your own experience of whatever it is that we may be doing as dog professionals, but when you've actually had that experience and when you're talking to owners, you can say, look, I've been there. I know exactly what you're going through. I totally understand. And, but I just love the fact that so many people just do this, do what they do for a living because of their own dogs. I just think that's so lovely. So thanks, Caris. I really appreciate your time today. As I say, I'll put some links on the description of this podcast.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So people can find you and the association that you mentioned, and then if people have any questions or queries, then obviously they can contact you and we can take it from there.
Definitely. But
thanks for listening to the It's Not Just One Thing That Will Help Your Dog podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. If you'd like any more information about anything that we've been discussing, please contact me. You can find my website by googling Physio My Dog. You can also look me up on Facebook and Instagram under the same name, Physio My Dog. I look forward to hearing from you.